Got plenty of football for you, but whoa, Seattle Mariners, step on up. The feel good vibes only, excuse me, is back, Pearl. Good morning. A big piece of the team that broke the longest playoff drought in North American sports history. That's what the Mariners were working with back in 2022. Eugenio Suarez, who was then traded away to Arizona, is heading back to Seattle and just in the nick of time because this team has a lot of expectations. It's been super fun with Cal Raleigh now as the MVP favorite in the American League with Aaron Judge sidelined from the Yankees. And they get Suarez back. Mm-hmm. I was not stunned because, you know, you could feel a little of this in the ether, but the Seattle Mariners just got a whole lot more interesting.
Well, I mean, basically they have the Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle of our generation. We all know coming into the season that if you can pair another slugger with Cal Raleigh, I'm just kidding. No, both these guys are already at career highs in home runs.
Wait, but do you know the stat, the nugget about Maris and Mantle?
No, are they on? What about it?
Wait, did you just pull that out
of
thin
air? No, it's funny. I mean, I know they're both in the top. You know, they have the leader in MLB home runs. That's immediately what came to mind. They're both on target for in their 50s.
Okay, but how about this? According to stats, this is just the second time in baseball history where a team enters August with at least two players that have at least 35 home runs. The other were the 1961 Yankees of Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle.
Yeah, of
course.
Amazing
pull.
But it's kind of obvious. But the funny thing is, Mickey Mantle was Mickey Mantle already. Cal Raleigh and Eugenio Suarez came out of nowhere. They are closer to Roger Maris.
Yeah, I mean, Suarez, though, now has, what, six seasons with at least 35 home runs? So he's, you know, a big deal.
But he's way, I heard a stat, the last calendar year, he's taken his game to a level that was never, ever expected.
Sure.
I mean, Cal Raleigh's even more expected. So, actually, sorry, Suarez, you're right, did have 40 home runs 1 year. So, this is really interesting. The baseball is so funny now because you can look at the whole trade deadline. If you are in the last wild card spot, are you like a no-brainer buyer? I think the Mariners sent a strong message that we're a no-brainer buyer. But you hear other teams right around that spot are like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That like have the, one
like
foot
the
in, one
Guardians.
Foot out.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. I think it's great that they're going like 2 feet in fully. And they didn't. And according to all the reports out of Seattle, they did not give up anything that's really going to hurt them.
So this is really exciting, I think, because we've been, you know, following the Cal Raleigh story, which in of itself, of course, the big dumper is awesome. And then you get back not just a fan favorite, but somebody who really can help this Mariners team that I said. Coming out of the All-Star break, you know, offense would take a little bit of a dip. Now you get infused with this life. So baseball trade deadline delivering right now with Suarez, as we knew was going to get moved. We just weren't sure where exactly. Your team added the best maybe reliever on the market, Pearl, and Joan Duran, so that's exciting for you.
Your team, the Mets, are like a dream team bullpen now, according to all the reports. Well, oh my gosh, like six deep.
Three different arms that the Mets have added over the last week or so. So that's exciting as well. Lots of really, really cool baseball going on.
Yeah, we still got till 6 p.m. Eastern today. See what the what the Dodgers, Yankees, et cetera. Some of the big boys have not made a move yet.
So also sticking with baseball for a second. Again, we've got tons of football for you, college and pro. But let's stick on baseball. There was a moment last night that I think everyone kind of collectively held their breath. Or maybe it was yesterday afternoon. And that was Shohei Ohtani in Cincinnati on the mound. And all of a sudden, he loses control of his pitches. It was ball after ball, wild pitch after wild pitch. I don't know what Dave Roberts, what took him so long. They're so afraid of Ohtani, it feels like. Everyone's so scared of him. You know, they don't want to disrupt his routine. Okay, that's fine. Baseball players have their routines. Don't disrupt the routine. I get it. But they're letting him out, you know, keeping him out there when he can't hit the ocean. Clearly, something is wrong. He said at first his hip, then he said it was the humidity because it was 90 degrees at first pitch yesterday in Cincinnati. Heat index was more like 100. Ohtani stayed in the game as a DH, was not very effective. 0-for-5, I believe, with 4 strikeouts. So it doesn't appear anything's wrong with Ohtani, but that was a hold-your-breath moment when Dave Roberts finally went out there and took him off the mound.
So the big question is, are you starting to come to my side that maybe pitching is too dangerous for the league's best hitter?
I'm trying not to be a baby about this thing, Pearl. It was just really hot. It was really hot and humid.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that, you know, exists really in L.A. It's not, you know, he's not going to have to deal with that kind of humidity when he makes his next start, which he's scheduled to do. And he was only supposed to go 4 innings anyway. It's not like they're asking him to go out there and throw 100 pitches.
Right, but I can't believe more people aren't on board with me. You are risking literally the surefire MVP every single year as a hitter. MVP, most valuable player in the league, to what, like ramp up to six innings here, like coming off Tommy John? Feels like a bit of a wild risk to me. If it wasn't, if the Dodgers didn't have a championship under their belt and an all-star team around him, I don't think they would. If it was a normal team, don't you think they would be more protective of him? And say you needed him as a slugger, which they don't, because they have Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts. Wow, those guys are struggling a little bit. But if it was a normal team, they would say, they would be with me and say, Ohtani, you are our whole life as a hitter. But the Dodgers are like, forget it. We just have the best team of all time.
Maybe it's some of that, although the Dodgers have had these all-star lineups and not won the World Series, and we've seen that. I think they're scared of him. Nobody in that organization wants to have a conversation with Ohtani, I think, about even broaching the topic of whether or not he's not going to pitch. I'm serious. He is one of those. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't actively, like, you know, flaunt his leverage, but he has it.
But
he gets to do whatever he wants to do. So if you want to say, like, you know, are you coming around to my side? Like, Ohtani is supposed to just, like, relent and not do the thing that he set out to do, which is pitch and hit. Nobody in that organization is going to tell him, stop doing this.
Wait, this is news to me. We've never looked at this story from that angle where he's forcing this, because they have him. They have all these strict rules around Ohtani. That's coming from the team.
No, the rules are Ohtani's. See, that's the thing. He said that he wants to pitch and hit. And even if the Dodgers said, we don't want you to do it anymore, I don't think that's factoring in. I think Ohtani gets to call the shots. There is like a, he doesn't get this because he's not like a diva and he doesn't come off that way at all. But there is a clear like 52-1 thing happening when it comes to Ohtani. And either you just got to get on board or not. Remember Mookie Betts at the All-Star game said he talks to him for, he sees them for like 2 seconds before a game. He has his whole different warm-up. He gets to be on his whole different schedule. If you want to extrapolate that out, part of that sort of isolating behavior, I think, and along with the language barrier and stuff, led to his interpreter ripping him off for years trying to cover gambling debts. Nobody wanted to come to Ohtani and ask him anything. No one wants to bring anything to his attention. And he's not the only athlete who's dealt with this. But like, someone's taking money out of his bank account and none of his agents want to say anything. No one wants to say anything. Like, I think people are just want to let him be.
What makes you think that, you know, he's done like a lot of like one inning and two innings. You're saying that's the pitcher's idea and not the team telling him to come out of the game? That feels like a team move.
No. I'm saying that if Ohtani wants to continue to pitch, which you don't want him to do. Right?
No, I want him off the mound. Right. Well, as a Phillies fan, I want him on the mound because I'm sure he's going to get hurt. But
take your fandom out.
Yes, I think he's going to get hurt if he keeps pitching.
Right. So you think that he should not be pitching. Even if the Dodgers also think that, they cannot say that to him.
But they've been controlling his innings very strictly. And there's no way Ohtani wants to come out when he does. They definitely are pulling him in and out. I think you're misreading like the control here.
No. You're getting into the minutia of, okay, maybe they're having conversations, and that's a collaborative, I would say, about how many pitches he's throwing and how many innings. I'm saying the fact that he's pitching at all, which you don't think he should do, that is Ohtani's call. Like, the fact that he's pulling the double duty, if you will.
How do you know that? Do you speak Japanese?
I think every other part of the Ohtani story would point to that, where he gets the leverage, especially when he was like going through free agency. You know, he gets to say to a team, do you want me? Do you not want me? These are the terms. And I think he's that big of a star, that much earning power for a team. He means that much to the business side. And I think he gets to call the shots from the very small to the very large thing.
Well, okay, let me ask you this question. Yeah. If you were the Dodgers, would you want him to pitch?
I mean, yeah, probably, because I do. He is really effective when he pitches, but I think he's the one who's dictating this, not them.
Okay. All right. I don't know.
Dave Roberts isn't doing anything. He's not standing up to Ohtani. He's not telling him, hey, man, I don't think you should skip the next start. I don't think that's happening either.
All right. First of all, I you say that like you know, like you're sitting there next to Ipe and Ohtani. And I feel like you might be overstating this dynamic. And secondly, I think that this is a convenient out for you because you know as well as I do, when that injury or the cramping came through last night, you thought the same exact thing. Oh, man, Perloff was right. Just admit it.
There was a moment I was like, oh, good God, I can't believe he's going to, after what is it, six starts, that all of a sudden he's going to be hurt again. But I think everyone else is underestimating. You got to hear what people are saying coming out of the Dodgers. He knows his own body. Mm. He gets to determine all of his pre-game rituals. I don't think he's working, you know, I don't think he's living by the same rules. And by the way, I don't care if he is or not. I'm not saying he has to have the same workout regimen or the same pregame routine as everyone else in baseball. I'm not saying he has to fall in line. Do you?
Yeah.
I'm just saying he has that power.
Three words.
What?
Perloff was right. Just say it.
Well, not yet, because he's not that hurt.
Oh, it was God, just is it cramping. That hard? Is it that hard?
I'll give you the credit when you've earned it. This one is a TBD.
Okay. All right. Because I got to tell you, man, if they do pull him off the mound because of health, I am going to do a victory lap. And he still hits, which would be the best case scenario.
He was making his seventh start yesterday.
And even so, the report, he's, you know, humidity and cramps. Anytime a pitcher is like, he's like, I couldn't feel what was going on. Like, come on, this is pitching. It's the most fragile position in all of pro sports.
Yeah.
Once something starts going wrong, this has to scare him and everybody else.
Let's hear a little from Dave Roberts. Can I hear cut seven, please, Manny? Where Roberts said he saw the two pitches that looked off, and that's what made him go check on Otani.
I just saw a funky throw. The follow-through just didn't look right, and I think it was on the one right before that pitch I came out. And then he threw another pitch, and I just didn't see the finish the right way, so I went out.
Yeah, I mean, he basically hit the mascot, and you finally got up and out there and onto the mound.
Funky pitch, by the way. Funky pitch is code for we'll see this guy in 3 years in baseball talk, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's not what you want to hear. More from Roberts, though. He thinks Ohtani will make his next start.
If you're looking at Shohei, the next time we're thinking about is next Wednesday, so he'll have a week. It'll be at home, so there won't be humidity to deal with.
All right, there you go. And there was nothing, he said there was nothing heading into the game that Dave Roberts was aware of that may have led to, I mean, these pitches were getting pretty wild here for Ohtani. But the cramping, it happens. It happens to the best athletes. They don't think anything's wrong.
That's funny. I don't remember pitchers cramping and going wild. That's a bizarre, I'm sure it happens all the time. I just don't remember this exact dynamic as a common thing in baseball.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't either. At first they said the hip, I thought. And it's like, well, that's not just cramps.
Oh,
cramps
boy.
Happen. Well, cramps, I guess, can happen anywhere. Cramps happen, I feel like, though, in your calf.
Oh, in the side of your stomach. That's the one I always had as a kid when you're running. Oh,
the
my
stitch.
Stomach.
A stitch.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the worst. Have you ever had that in the middle of the night if you're woken up by a cramp in your foot or your calf
Charlie
muscle?
Charlie horse in the middle of the night after basketball practice all the time.
The worst pain. And it usually doesn't last for very long. You're like, am I going to lose a leg?
Yeah.
That's how bad it is. Or you feel like your toes are all kind of gnarled.
And you have to straighten your leg out immediately.
Mm.
That's the worst. Or if you're sleeping with a partner, they're like, what it just happened? Like you kick them like, I can't move my leg.
That pain is unbearable. It's inhumane. I think it's worse than childbirth.
Yeah, easy. The one thing I always think of too, I'm like, is this
good call,
it?
Good call, Manny.
Yeah. Let's you and I compare notes. It's like, is this the blood clots? That's what I'm always worried of. I'm like, is this it? Is this the big one? But it's usually just cramps because forgot to stretch. Your mind doesn't go there?
No.
Oh, good.
Is that a thing that can happen? Now my mind will.
I know. Now I've just infiltrated everyone's brain with new things to worry
about.
Can
you get a blood clot in your calf?
I have no idea.
Oh, man. I mean, listen, back to Shohei.
Yeah.
Just being funky pitches, hip, all these words are terrifying to a pitcher. Especially a guy who's gone through Tommy John, especially a guy who's putting so much wear and tear in his body. And I get, by the way, the humidity thing. I'm watching these NFL guys. This humidity, this is dangerous. I was just walking in my car yesterday, and I almost had to get a Gatorade bath. This is crazy outside.
It does feel a little bit weird. But I don't know why the humidity would lead to more Achilles and all these... I don't know.
Oh, man.
I thought that sometimes like having it be kind of sauna-like is kind of good for your muscles. Obviously, you don't want to be dehydrated, but, you know, there's something where it's like you get kind of loosen up in the hot weather.
Total left turn, and this is probably just for you and me. Have you noticed the NFL reporters out there trying to keep it together in the humidity?
No.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine what's happening to your hair and your makeup in this?
I've been out there.
Yeah.
It's you end up looking like a horror show.
Yeah, I saw our good friend Judy Batista out there. She had her hair all pulled back and had on the shortest sleeve shirt. And she was amazing, but it is challenging out there. I mean, that's soldiers. I had to go out there and ask three questions to whoever.
Yeah, for, you know, things that won't even count or matter in a matter of weeks. But we love it. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. All right, got it going with Eugenio Suarez. Geno Suarez back with the Seattle Mariners, which is super exciting for the Mariners crowd. Big stuff at the trade deadline, but then also Shohei Ohtani having to leave his seventh start of the year because he had cramping. And I think he's calling all the shots here. I don't think anyone of the Dodgers has, I don't say the stones, it's not about that, but I think they've entered into an agreement with him where he has so much leverage and so much power over his pregame routines, over his schedule of hitting and pitching, over how he feels he can handle his body. I think it's almost unprecedented in a way, 52-1.
This dude got pushed around by a translator.
He got manipulated by a translator.
Pushed around by a translator, and you're telling me the team doesn't have power over him? This guy, I feel like anybody can push him around.
Oh, boy. 888-710-4ISN. So that's a little of what's going on in the baseball world. In football, so much happened yesterday, including a potentially cautionary tale for the rest of the NFL, which we'll get to next. MVP.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. Obviously, started off today with baseball trade deadline day, but it's been sort of a wild week in training camp. A lot of injuries, similar, we talked about Shohei's injury. I think a lot of heat-related injuries. But it's funny, a lot of teams have had these injuries and dodged a bullet, but usually this time of year, we're talking about quarterback battles. We do not have a lot around the NFL, but a couple to sink our teeth into.
Yeah, obviously the Browns is like the real headliner, right? Yeah. Those are four guys. I think it's going to be Flacco, but now Kenny Pickett has a hamstring, and you got Shador and Dylan Gabriel as the two rookies, and like what's going to go on there. And meanwhile, it's like Deshaun Watson kind of like floating around there, recovering from an Achilles, whatever. But that's like a crazy one. I think the one in New Orleans, stakes feel a little lower on that one, whether it's going to be Spencer Rattler or Tyler Shuck, because New Orleans is basically expected to be one of the worst teams in the NFL this season. So whoever it is may just be keeping the seat warm for the next guy. What's going on with the Colts is very interesting.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't really find Daniel Jones interesting that much anymore. But Anthony Richardson is still extremely interesting because he was somebody who was a project, clearly coming out of Florida. He had barely had any experience, but he has all the physical tools. And he came into the NFL, and he struggled. And he's owning it now, Pearl, but he's locked in this quarterback battle with Daniel Jones, and he's in danger of losing not just the starting job, but maybe, I don't say his football career, but like we're kind of there right now. And I want to blame the Colts a lot for this. I do. I really do. I want to blame Shane Steichen. I want to blame the Colts and say, what do you think was going to happen? You brought a guy who had 13 starts or whatever at Florida, who we knew was a project, and you threw him out there, you know, to get eaten by the Wolves in the NFL. What do you think was going to happen? Well, now the GM is blaming that on the since-deceased owner, Jim Irsay. He's not here to defend himself. Said it was an owner's decision to start Anthony Richardson right away. Convenient. When, you know, he can no longer be here to have a rebuttal. But Anthony Richardson, I think, still has to own a lot of this. You know, I've never seen a quarterback take himself out of a game and out of a drive because he was tired. It's just you don't see something like that. You get knocked out. Okay, gosh. I mean, that's the worst. But just because you're fatigued, like, he wasn't taking the job seriously.
So you're saying that that was so significant to you that you're kind of selling on the career?
Well, he got benched because of that. So it was significant to everybody. But no, he's got a lot of ground to make up. Like, I want to blame the Colts for all of the failures up to this point, but I think Richardson really has to own a lot of this.
I love playing a game. How much younger is Anthony Richardson than every single other person? And here's a little fact. The three rookie quarterbacks last year, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, and Jaden Daniels were all born in the year 2000. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Anthony Richardson, who's 2 years in, was born in the year 2002. He is so much. I mean, he should be coming out now. There's no reason he should have started. I think the Colts, to their credit, have admitted that was a massive mistake.
Yeah.
Blaming it on the deceased owner is a little weak sauce. I agree with that. But it was a major mistake. He is still so young. There's still so much future with this guy. I just think you can't hold him to the fire for what happened between the ages of 20 and 21. He was just too young. He shouldn't have been out there. You're right. I blame it on the team. I'm not going to bury him because of that.
Well, he still has time to make up for this, but I ask you, like, is the team actually giving him a fair shake? They brought in Daniel Jones, and they pay him like $15 million. That's a lot for a backup. It's not insignificant, money. And they're locked in this quarterback battle. Daniel Jones has, 7 years of experience, six years of experience on
But all the indications are that Richardson's doing really well in this quarterback battle. The other thing, Richardson has had major problems staying healthy. So that is
Jones.
That was not just to push him. That was also like, oh, well, this guy runs and he's a massive target out there that he keeps getting hurt.
Yeah, so does Daniel Jones. What a back issue.
Yeah, well, maybe.
And Manny knows all about it as a Giants fan.
Put two half-injured guys together, you get one hole, Maggie. You know what's so funny about Anthony Richardson, too? Like a lot of young quarterbacks, when you can move, you can win some games. So he has a crazy low completion percentage, 47% last year. He's still 6-5 as a starter because when push comes to shove, he can get some big yards with his legs. So he is still promising to the Colts. I'm way more high on his potential to come out of nowhere because I think most people think he's done. But how can you be done when you're 23?
I'm just wondering, did Tom Brady kind of tell us all about this 2 years ago? And maybe he said even before then, but that's when it got a lot of attention. Like, Tom Brady was at Fanatics Fest 2 years ago in New York, and you and I happened to be there sitting in the crowd as he was talking about and sort of complaining, lamenting the state of both college football and the pros. And he said, for college football, nobody runs a system anymore. Okay. Nobody runs a system anymore, right? And nobody's running pro style, which what he ran when he was at Michigan and learned, like, prepared him for the next level. Now guys are just running an offensive system. EJ, we got some audio of that. Here's Tom Brady last year.
I actually think college players were better prepared when I came out than they are now.
Wow.
Just because so many coaches are changing programs. And I would say there's not even a lot of college programs anymore. There's a lot of college teams. But not programs that are developing players. So as they get delivered to the NFL, they may be athletic, but they don't have much of the skills developed to be a professional.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly explaining Anthony Richardson, right? They have the physical tools, but they don't have the skills. And then Brady went on to say, about how it's important for guys to sit and to learn and to actually be coached. So, this is kind of like the Anthony Richardson story. And if you're going to blame it, that Jim Irsay, the owner, wanted to, shove him out there and run him out there to sell tickets or what have you. Well, what are you supposed to say? I mean, the guy passed away. So, you can't say, well, you were wrong, Jim. I mean, it's too late for that. But
it's kind of funny. So Brady took that philosophy of the Raiders, and they could have gone with a young quarterback. They signed 34-year-old Geno Smith for a pretty fair amount of money. So Brady seems to lean towards a veteran. I'm not sure he's 100% right because a lot of rookies are coming in and killing it. I mean, we saw Jaden Daniels last year in the NFC title game. I guess one thing that, and I don't think Brady was not saying this true, some guys get 5 years in college and are ready to go. And that's just factually not true. He came in the league in 2000. Quarterbacks are way ahead of where they were in 2000. They're coming in the league 50 times more prepared than 2000. There's just no doubt about it. Young quarterbacks are killing it compared to them.
Yeah, the one thing about that, though, is are they more prepared, or are the NFL teams kind of catering to them? Because I think a lot of guys come in, and you can watch like some of John Gruden's like quarterback stuff when he talks to the young guys before they get drafted. And like Jackson Dart had a famous one that made the rounds when he got drafted that he couldn't call a play. Like, he is like, well, two claps. Like,
well, they all know, right? But that's been two decades of spread offense. I mean, ever since Art Briles got to Baylor, like, that's been the thing.
Right, and it held guys back.
But
yeah, that was our pal Greg Giannotti over on WFAN. Yeah. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Now the NFL will cater to that, right?
Yeah. Where, now the NFL stole that from college.
Right, and Tom Brady's saying, when he was probably doing the whole spider 2-y banana by the time he got into the NFL. Like, you're actually coming in with play calls.
Right, but you're
getting in and out of a huddle.
But the passing game is so much more advanced because kids are all playing 7-on-7. Like, what Jaden Daniels did last year, that was not happening in 2000. David Carr came in the league, was the number one pick in 2002 coming out. I assume a spread at Fresno State. Like, they had... It's just a different game. Quarterback, would you agree? Like, look at the young quarterbacks in the league right now. They're incredible.
Let's get to Andrew Bogish, who's got the latest updates for us. Good morning, Bogish.
Guys, good morning. Your headlines are sponsored by Progressive Commercial Insurance. Protecting small businesses with affordable coverage options. Get a quote today at progressivecommercial.com.
It was in the New York Post, baby.
The run-up to baseball's trade deadline at 6 Eastern today, not disappointing. While many of us were sleeping, the Mariners reunited with third baseman Eugenio Suarez, sending three prospects to Arizona. Suarez's 36 homers, apparently the most ever traded at the deadline. But the Mariners didn't win their game last night.
0-1 pitch, Wu delivers, and that one's going to drive to deep left field. That'll be his second home run in as many at-bats. It's 5-3 Athletics.
That's Miguel Andujar, who PS, one of the failed Yankee prospects. Two solo homers in the A's 5-4 win over Seattle. The M's dropping into a tie with the Rangers for the last wild card spot in the AL. Texas avoiding a three-game sweep in Anaheim with a 6-3 win.
Miguel Andujar still plays in the United States?
Yeah, how about that?
Oh, my God. You learn something new every day.
There's like a whole probably like podcast investigation series you could do on all of these guys the Yankees told us were great, never traded them.
Hosted by Sean Marash.
Real people. And then those guys turned into nothing.
Can you call it Greg Bird's life?
Oops.
Oh, man.
A Bird's life?
That's baseball, Susan.
Sorry, Gleyber Torres leading off the All-Star
game,
by the way.
A Bird's life? That's a great name, Maggie. Came off the top of your head.
You're welcome. America.
And Duhar might have been one of the guys that they didn't trade for Gerrit Cole when he went to the Astros.
Hey, man, Miguel Andujar was a runner-up, one of the runners-up for Rookie of the Year. So, I mean, I don't know. That's a hell of a trade piece that the Yankees had.
And now you didn't even know he still had a job.
That's right, yes. Okay. I was sure he was playing in Korea.
That Suarez trade, by the way, came after the Mets sent out six players to get Cardinals closer Ryan Helsley and Giants reliever Tyler Rogers. His twin brother, Taylor, went from the Reds to the Pirates yesterday, with Cincinnati getting back third baseman Key Brian Hayes. And the Phillies took a big swing, sending two top 10 prospects to the Twins for closer Juan Duran. GM Dave Dombrowski saying maybe the best part of the deal, Duran under contract for multiple more years.
We would not have paid this price for a rental. So that's what really is a difference for us. So not only this year, but two more years, two more seasons after this. So if we were talking a pure rental, we would not have traded these players for that.
The Phillies made the move while waiting out a long rain delay in Chicago. Then they lost to the White Sox 9-3.
By the way, on the Rodgers trade, you know how much bragging rights Tyler now has? He's like, I'm going to the Mets. You're going to the Pirates, bro?
No.
Yeah, two brothers.
Hey, have fun. Have fun over there, buddy. Losing 110 games or whatever. I would be. As a brother, I would be talking so much smack.
You're like, not sad for your brother that all of a sudden you're going to, you know, a non-contender?
I would be talking a lot of trash. I would. I'd be like, yo, you both get traded, which is already kind of a harrowing thing. But you're like, okay, I'm going to the Mets. Okay, you know, moving to the other side of the coast. But at least I'm playing for a winner. Where'd you get traded to? The Pirates?
How about this, though? Kick, save, and a beauty. Maybe Livy Dunn has a friend. Now you're in Paul Skeens' world.
There you go.
Oh, God, well,
for 10 more days.
So you can trade again.
Yeah,
or whatever.
10 hours. Yeah.
But still, he might get the last laugh here.
You think Paul Skeens is welcoming Taylor Rogers to the squad? Like, hey, welcome to the squad, buddy. Let's go out.
Inner circle.
Swing by the apartment. Yeah. Livy's friends are in town.
Who do you want to be, E or Turtle?
Yeah, Taylor Rogers is definitely like 34 years old, too. Like, definitely.
He's probably
not
married as well. There's a Mrs. Rogers shedding a single tear right now.
And you're not the only Rogers in Pittsburgh. Get to that a little bit later.
That is true.
Uh-huh.
As you guys mentioned to start the show, a scare last night for the Dodgers. Shohei Ohtani pulled from the mound after throwing six straight balls to start the fourth inning in Cincinnati. The team eventually said Ohtani was dealing with cramps in his hip. He stayed at DH and went 0-for-5 in a game the Dodgers lost 5-2. At the moment, Ohtani is scheduled to make his next start.
I'm sorry, just our own Andrew Kaplan putting in our Slack chat. Seems pretty common here. Tyler Glasnow, Casey Mize, both guys who have dealt with cramps in their lower leg.
While pitching
because of dehydration.
And that's where Ohtani's cramp was?
That's what he's saying.
Who's saying? Kapp is saying or Ohtani's saying?
No, Ohtani.
And the Dodgers.
Yeah, Dave Roberts.
Oh, okay.
Apparently you could have seen, he was like massaging the hip or even like punching it, so like there were signs that's where the problem was. In like going back and like looking over the last couple of pitches, you could see him apparently trying to like mess with his hip and loosen it up.
Oh, I thought you said lower leg.
No, the first they said hip, then they said leg. Some of these have been lower leg, like Tyler Glasnow. I'm just saying it does happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have a cramp anywhere in your leg. Like, I mean, yeah. I assume like when it's probably glute area too, probably as well.
Sorry, Casey Mize was full body cramping.
Oh my God.
That sounds
petrifying.
Yeah. It always reminds me of LeBron James in the finals against San Antonio when the air conditioning went out. That's like a huge conspiracy theory in sports. Have you guys ever pulled that thread a little bit?
And you're bringing it up.
I mean, anytime you talk about cramping, right? Have you ever heard like all the details about that?
Oh yeah, definitely. That story's been out there forever. I mean, obviously the famous one is Boston Garden.
Yeah.
Boston Garden is another one, and the San Antonio, all the factors that had to go in to the Heat and how that played right into the San Antonio Spurs lap, and how they happened to have a giveaway that night that was fans, like that you could fan yourself.
I don't know a lot about this. This is my day's going to
be. I've got some literature in my car that will change your life on this one.
This one is not a Maggie Gray special. This one is widespread.
This is actually a Greg Popovich special. Yeah, it's right up there with JFK.
When you said full body cramping, though, it made me think of those like marathon runners, the triathletes that are like getting to the finish line and they're like literally falling apart. I don't like that. Where were we? Oh, the Raiders extending left tackle Colton Miller for 3 years, reportedly $42.5 million in guarantees. Trey Hendrickson did not practice yesterday at Bengals camp after ending his holdout. He and the team don't appear any closer to a deal, despite Hendrickson giving in. And as far as we know right now, nothing inappropriate thrown on the court during any of last night's WNBA action. The Fever winning again without Caitlin Clark, 107-101 over the Mercury. Ari McDonald scoring a career-high 27. Indiana's now won 3 straight, 7-7 without Clark. Guys, back to you.
Bogush, thank you so much. Let's head to Wilson, who's in California. Wilson, you want to weigh in on Shohei Ohtani? What's up?
Yes, I do. And good morning to both of you. I agree with both of you guys. First off, Perloff, I agree.
Thank you.
They shouldn't let this guy. Yeah, you're welcome, sir. They shouldn't let this guy pitch. But Maggie, you're right. And this was all set up, you know, prerequisite to him coming to the Dodgers, you know, that he does make the calls. The thing is about Shohei, I think when you really look at the big picture, he wants to be known as the great offensive force, but he also wants to be known as a pitcher. Mm-hmm. And I think he sees his legacy and the greatness of his legacy as being out there on the field next to the guys on defense and playing. And that's where the catch 22 is, okay? Because I don't think he should be pitching. And now that he's got these cramps and he's got these problems, the coaches need to have the wherewithal to say, okay, that's it.
Yeah, but Wilson, I don't think they're going to, you know? I mean, obviously, if he's in danger of really hurting himself, and thank you so much for the phone call, then I guess, but I don't think they're going to say anything to him. And Wilson's right. Like, Shohei, there's a lot of great baseball players and multiple-time MVPs, but there's only a couple baseball players that are immortal. And I think that's what Shohei's going for. And it's only a bummer, you know, that we don't speak Japanese or he maybe doesn't feel comfortable enough in his English to get inside that mentality. Like, I'd love to know what's driving that, because clearly he wants to be the modern Babe Ruth and, you know, someone who's going to live on long after, you know, he's actually done playing baseball.
Yeah, I think he could do it as a hitter, because the all-time MVP record is Bonds with 7, which is totally flawed because of the PEDs, and Shohei's already got 3, and he's what, 30? He could, at this pace, it feels like he was going to win the MVP every year. If he put together 8 MVPs, isn't that enough?
I don't know. I don't. In his mind, no. But I'd love to know, like, what is that in his brain that is causing this? We'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Bogush. Coming up, we do have Aaron Rodgers back on the mic and Mike Tomlin, both talking about their bromance.
It's Kaiser Sose.
Their words, not mine. Maggie and Perloff.
Monkeys never claps.
What the f*** is Aaron Rodgers up to today?
Don't be a freaking weirdo.
Too late. What's Aaron Rodgers up to? Yesterday, Pearl, was an appearance on the Pat McAfee show in Latrobe.
Yep.
In front of a live audience. Very pro Rodgers.
My dog.
And it looked like a very fun interview. He's talking about Iron City beer and, you know, doing the whole I've been here, you know, I know everything about Pittsburgh type of thing. So ingratiating himself to the fans, which is cool. We'll play you a little Rodgers. But first, how about some Mike Tomlin, who was also on McAfee, talking about the recruitment of Rodgers. Called it a bromance.
It was kind of a bromance, you know what I mean? No. You know, for me, man, I was just excited.
to get to know the guy on a personal level. And so that's how I viewed it. Man, we had some cool and interesting conversations about football, about life, about where he is in his career and what he was potentially looking for.
Okay, more from Tomlin. This cuts a little bit longer, and the question is in it, too, from one of the guys from McAfee about having a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers gives the Steelers hope.
Just the possibilities, man. To have a guy like that, man, in your huddle, in your locker room, a part of your group, it certainly gives us all great confidence.
Okay, so I'll play a little more from Rodgers in a moment, Pearl, but this is what I want to get at with some of these quotes.
Yep.
Rodgers came into the Steelers. First of all, we weren't even sure if he was actually going to play football. He definitely had a lot of things going on in his personal life. Let's not forget that. And it was like a will he, won't he, will he retire, should he retire? And now he is playing football. When he got to Pittsburgh, it was not like when he got to the Jets and said, oh, that Lombardi trophy is looking a little lonely. He said, you know, the press tried to get, you know, not manipulate him, but tried to get him to talk about Super Bowl. And at least at first, he would not do that. It was a very different tone and tenor that he brought to the Steelers that he did to the Jets. All of that is out the window now. It's all in. They're talking championship now. It's only taken a couple days. You know, play more from...
It was. Did you see it physically? It was a wild party in Pittsburgh.
It was crazy.
When Tomlin got up there, I thought the crowd acted... It felt like you were at a Kansas City Chiefs parade or something. Like, they were so excited and optimistic. And Tomlin looked like he had a whole new breath of... He looked amazing. He looked like he lost 10 years.
Okay, let's hear more from Tom. Can I hear cut 16 on how things feel so different now with Aaron Rodgers?
Does it feel different to you when you look over and you're like, okay, since Ben, that's Aaron Rodgers?
You're damn right it does.
I mean, they are, it's completely changed now. We're no longer doing the, hey, let's pump the brakes on expectations or anything like that. And can I just also play you a little from Rodgers, the man himself? This one's a tiny bit longer, but Pearl, here's Aaron Rodgers on McAfee Show on why he likes Mike Tomlin so much.
Mike T is the man. From day one that we talked on the phone in the offseason, I was never talking to a head coach. I was talking to a friend. I respected the hell out of that. I have crazy respect for him. The way that he leads the room, the way that he talks in the team meeting, the way he is at practice. The surprise has been just what a great dude he is, what a great leader he is, on top of what I already expected, which was already high based on what I thought from afar.
I mean, this is like the football equivalent of wedding vows. I mean, you can't get any nicer. You can't get any more effusive in your praise of somebody, Pearl. Is it possible that, you know, this relationship, like, what do you foresee for the season with this relationship?
The excitement, the sort of rejuvenated hope in Pittsburgh, all that's going to go away when Arthur Smith calls 9 straight running plays to Jalen Warren in week 2, and they squeak out a 19-13 win, and it's going to be like, all right, we're in the wild card hunt. Because convince me, Maggie, that this isn't just Pittsburgh Steelers 10-7. Because that's reality, and it feels great. Like, around the entire NFL, everything feels great. It's July.
Yeah.
But this feels like, okay, this excitement is not going to match the product we're used to in Pittsburgh. Where I remember, you saw me do it. Kenny Pickett threw 5 touchdowns in a preseason game. And I said, Steelers are going to the Super Bowl. And then they just did not call the right plays. Mike Tomlin, I don't know, like new Mike Tomlin still wants to win with defense. So all this excitement, I doubt it will be matched on the field consistently next season.
See, I don't know if it matters necessarily how it looks. Like, does Rodgers have to be an MVP candidate and him throwing 40 touchdowns? Like, I, as long as they're winning, I just think it's crazy how there was some tepid, like, is this going to work or what is the actual expectations for the Steelers? That was like 2 weeks ago. Now it's, and I don't blame the fans on this, by the way. Be excited. You got Aaron Rodgers in the building. That's fine.
Oh, I would be that way too.
I watched it with the Jets. I mean, this was so exciting. It was so positive. The Jets coaching staff was saying the same thing. Hey, he's our guy. We got him in the building. Look at that over there. You got Aaron Rodgers. Now that unfortunately ended basically with that Achilles pop. But it's like now we're looking at, and this is something that I've been saying about the Steelers. Not that I might be right, but I've just been saying it. They think this is an all-in year.
Yeah.
They are now looking at Super Bowl, and I thought that was the case.
Yep.
With the moves they've made, it's been very different. Trading for DK Metcalf is not a a move that we generally see out of the Steelers. You know, bringing in Jalen Ramsey, we're still not even really sure why that would happen for Minka. I mean, they didn't want to pay Minka Fitzpatrick, I guess, but it's like all these moves, you know, that we were not used to with the Steelers, they're looking all in.
I don't know, like, you say they're looking all in. You think the Steelers believe that? Because nobody on the outside believes that.
They do.
They have to, doing what they did yesterday. I think that has to change your perspective. But they had excitement last year.
And that, let me read you the first. You say it doesn't matter how it looks. The first 3 weeks last year, they beat Atlanta 18-10, Denver 13-6, and the Chargers 20-10 with Justin Fields. Do you think everyone was like, it mattered how it looked then? It mattered to the point where they're like, well, we won these games, but that didn't look good. And the fans are like, oh, God, here we go again.
I don't know. I remember when Russell Wilson was a sneaky MVP candidate, people were talking about it because I think he went 5-2 or whatever when he first took over from Fields.
They always land the plane at 10-7. And until you show me something different, like, I just can't understand. Yeah, fans are excited in August. But the reality is, and ask our buddy Andrew Filipponi in Pittsburgh. I think a lot of fans think, oh, this is definitely headed to the same place where we've been stuck under Mike Tomlin, which is wild card and gone.
Okay, so you're not into raspberries.
So what I'm saying is yesterday, I don't know where the record's going to land. 10-7.
I do, 10-7.
That's fine. Getting to the playoffs is fine. What I'm saying is this went from let's see how it goes, and this is almost like a match made out of convenience because where was Rodgers going to go and what were the Steelers going to do with the quarterback? They had literally nobody, Mason Rudolph and, you know, a draft pick, a late round draft pick. It was, all right, well, I guess this makes sense. Let's pair it together to this is a bromance. We are more connected and in sync than ever, than anyone, and the respect and all of that. And they're now talking championship there.
Yeah, okay, I'm not like, disagreeing. You're right.
It changed. But something changed.
But I think from the outside, I think more people with me are skeptical, like, oh, man, like the day they signed them, our buddy Warren Sharp, really sharp, no pun intended, NFL analyst said, Mike Tomlin has never met a 10-7 season he doesn't love.
Yeah.
And that's what Aaron Rodgers feels like at this point of his career. Like, he's going to be good, not great. I feel like the Steelers look good, not great. And the all in, like, they went all in with DK Metcalf. But you look at the rest of their roster, they have a lot of young guys. I don't feel like they're any different than they've really been the last 5 years.
Can I say one more thing? I learned a new word yesterday. That I didn't know. I don't know if, like, Merriam-Webster is acknowledging this, but I had never heard the term swass.
What, say it again?
Swass. So I don't know what swass is. One of the guys on McAfee. Manny, play cut 14, please. This is Aaron Rodgers talking about working with center Zach Frazier.
Sweet West Virginia boy, Zach Frazier. Hopefully he has a towel for you today with all that swass that's probably going on.
No, he's actually a light sweater, so we're good on that.
Wow.
We're good on that.
Is he getting the ball up to you yet?
Yeah, at least back there it's light, you know?
Sorry, that was is that Boston Connor?
That was definitely Connor.
Swass. Yeah.
So sweat.
Yeah. Sweat in your butt.
Yeah.
I didn't know that because one of Tom Brady's former centers told a story, Ted Karras told a story recently on Julian Edelman's podcast about how Tom Brady once put baby powder on his butt. And I thought that story was 100% fake. Turns out it may have been true.
Oh, definitely. I thought it was true.
I read recently Tom Brady was obsessed with having a dry center.
Yeah, it was Ted Karras who was telling this story.
Yeah.
Apparently, Zach Frazier, not a sweater down there, but I had never heard that term swass before. A
lot of swass in the New York City area over the last few days.
I've heard of swamp.
Manny's pants.
Swamp ass.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Hey, I have a question for you, though, Maggie.
Yes. What a linguist, that Boston Connor.
So even if the Steelers fans are excited, like, are you excited? I think that's an important question, too. Like, just because the fans are excited, like, honestly, like, if anybody thinks that this is a Super Bowl team, you have to rush to your sports book now. They're 50-1. They're tied with the Bears. I am seeing this. There's no scenario. Yes, this is optimistic, but come on. Like, what is different? They are the same team.
I think it's because I've been sitting next to you now for a while, and you always bring up Brett Favre in Minnesota.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, okay.
And there's a little part of me that can't ever really quit Aaron Rodgers and his ability because I watched him my whole life be awesome.
Right. I'm back in.
All right, coming up, from the old guy at training camp to the very young guy at training camp. Get to that next.